Actually, we can give out pages now. Here. Here, pass the pages out. Pass them out. Don't look at them yet, but you can pass them out.
I guess we got it covered.
Oh, but my phone's not. There's no plita here. Okay, I'm going to begin by explaining the title. Anybody want a seat in the middle is a besimcha. And phones, please do not turn them off because you might have a FOMO. So just put them on vibrate. And I'm sure if you guys can text while you're driving, you can check your message as well, listening to a shiur. So really, I'm serious, don't mind if you check your mail in the middle. You don't have to, but I really don't mind. I feel better because that's what I do when I listen to someone speaking. I check my mail and listen in. That way I can concentrate. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, we'll start. I'll explain the title first. When I said the Patrus Tov Chanukah, you caught on. It's about, there's some connection between this and the holiday they call Christmas. And that's the goal of the shiur isn't to show how the holidays are related, but you'll see in the shiur that they actually are related, other than the fact that when you grew up, they always came out the same time of year. Now, we'll start with Chanukah. From what you remember learning, why is Chanukah on the 25th of Kislev? Like, what's the real simple reason? Give me a simple reason. Why is Chanukah on the 25th of Kislev? Who learned that? Why is Chanukah? Yeah?
Wasn't that, that's when the first day of trying to light the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash.
The Mikdash, yeah. And why that day? Why Chanukah?
Oh, because the last two letters of the word are. I mean, I think that's what you're suggesting. I'm not.
Yeah, that's the drasha. What'd you learn?
That was the day that they rededicated it.
No. Chanukah.
Oh, sure. They stopped, the war.
The war ended. They rested from battle on the 25th, and they looked at the menorah that day, and it lasted for 8 days. Tell me if this is a story you grew up with. The Jews are battling the Greeks. They tried to kill us. We won. They tried to kill us. We won the war. We won the war on the 25th. We rested from battle on the 25th, and it was getting late, and we found a little thing of oil, and we put together a quick little menorah. We lit the menorah, and the menorah lasted for 8 days. That was such a cool miracle, we decided to celebrate that forever. That's Hanukkah? Okay, now. So, a version of it, yeah. An oversimplified version. So, a couple things. One is, if that's what happened, the first night of Hanukkah should be the 26th. Correct? That the first candle would be the 26th, not the 20th. Because we'd light the 24th at night. So, it would be better if they rest on the 24th, not the 25th. Two, if the candelabra lit for 8 days, they would not have fulfilled the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, because the mitzvah is to light the menorah, not for the menorah to be lit. And if you follow the Chumash, you light the menorah in the evening, till the morning. In the morning, if it's still burning, you extinguish it. And it's not lit during the day, and you set it up in the morning, and you light it at night, till morning. Remember, Erev Ad Boker. That's it. So they would not, it might have been a miracle, but it wouldn't have been a mitzvah. So that couldn't have been. And also the date is not, we'll see something about the date later in a minute also. Now, so let's get back to work. What I want to do is I want to show you that the date of Hanukkah is actually not, it's not a rabbinic holiday. It starts in the time of Tanakh, and even earlier. How could that be? We'll see. So I'm going to start with the first source sheet, just to, yeah, on the source sheet I gave you. Page one. Source sheet one. Okay, here. Take a look on the right column. Take a look in book C on E, which says Chagai. Look in Pasuk Yud. See that? Besim v'abra la'chi'i b'shat shayim la'dayavesh, the 24th of the ninth month, which is 24th of Kislev, in the second year of Dayavesh. Chagai had a prophecy. He says, pay attention to this day, the day before they start putting rock on God's house. He says, pay attention to the day, simel avachem, from the 24th day and on, from the day that God's house was, when they laid the foundations on God's house, pay attention. We'll see in a minute what we're paying attention to. What I'm trying to show you is that the 24th of Kislev, early in the Second Temple period, back to the very beginning of the Second Temple period, under the reign of the Persian king Dayavesh, is the day they broke ground on the Second Temple, or they prepared to break ground on the Second Temple. Got that? Now, that might be a tremendous coincidence. Wait, Hanukkah was First Temple or Second Temple?
Second.
Hanukkah is Second Temple, isn't it?
Yeah.
Should be. Because the Greeks are Second Temple, and the Nazarenes are Second Temple. So they're... So this nevuah about Hanukkah, this nevuah on Hanukkah, preceded our story of Hanukkah by some 200 years. So that might be just a coincidence, but it can't be a coincidence that there's a nevuah on the day that they dedicate the Second Temple, about the Second Temple, on the 24th of Kislev, and Hanukkah is a rededication of the Temple. Because what's Hanukkah mean? Dedication. Chanukah tamizbeach, yad m'chamesh. When you dedicate something from new, it's called Hanukkah. So again, it might be a coincidence, but I want to show you this year, it's not a coincidence. So we have to understand what's happening in the beginning of Beit Sheni, and why are they breaking ground on the temple this time of year, and this time in Jewish history. That'll be the background of Hanukkah. Yeah. So we have to do this. We'll do this the short way. I'm assuming you know the history a little bit, but you help me. Who destroyed the first temple? Who were the bad guys in the end of the first temple period? Remember them? Who was their king?
Nebuchadnezzar.
You cannot answer questions, remember? Yeah, you have to be... I want to make sure you've heard of Nebuchadnezzar. He was a bad guy, they destroyed the temple. Where did the Jews go to?
Babel.
They're in Babylonia, in Babylonian exile. And a lot of them are pretty much down and depressed because it's over. Because this is the first time the Jewish people have ever been exiled en masse. So we had defeats and losses, but there was always someone in Israel. And now Israel's gone, no one's left there. No temple, no Jerusalem, no nothing. Even Gedalia's gone. And a lot of people thought it's over. Some guy named Yechezkel had people who were saying that we're like dry bones, which can't come back to life. So what's he tell them? Oh, these dry bones will come back to life. But he's talking to people who think they're the dry bones. He says, don't give up hope. But most people have given up hope. Well, there was one prophet before it was destroyed who tried to prevent it. Remember his name?
Yirmiyahu.
You've heard of Yirmiyahu. He tried to prevent it. It didn't work. But he told them that if God does, you know, send you into exile, you come back one day. But it's going to take a long time. How many years? Remember the 70? So the Jews are in exile. And Yirmiyahu predicted Babel would fall. And one day they'd come back. No one really took that seriously. And sure enough, after about 70 years of Babylonian rule, the Babylonians fall to the Iranians. Not the Iranians back then, they were called
Persians.
You've heard of the Persians? And the Persians defeated the Babylonians, and they were really proud of themselves. And their first king who defeated them, his name was, what was his last name? His last name was the Great. A lot of the kings have the same family. Remember Alexander the Great and Darius the Great and Cyrus the Great? So Cyrus the Great, Koresh in Hebrew, he was a Persian king who defeated the Babylonians. And what's the most important thing for Jewish history is that when he took over the Babylonian Empire, the Babylonians were hated by the people who they conquered because they exiled them to all different lands. It wasn't only the Jews were exiled; they exiled everybody, and therefore the people hated their exilers. The Persians have a new policy. They want good citizens who pay taxes, who obey. And they said, any ethnic group in the Persian Empire, exiled by the Babylonians, has the right to go back to their homeland and rebuild their temples, and you can have religious autonomy, just be good citizens, pay your taxes, serve in the army. Understand? And that was, and it's written, it's in the British Museum. You've heard of the Cyrus Decree? They found it even. And it's like, really... Well, and yes, it wasn't just for the Jews to go back. Anyone can go back. No. The Jewish people at that time had prophets. And the question the prophets have to deal with, is this just a political event that the Persians are doing? I mean, for their political intrigue? You know, this is a good political idea. It's got nothing to do with our religion. Or is God talking to us through Jewish history? Through outside history? Is Koresh's decision to allow us to return among the other nations to build a temple, is that really God talking through Koresh? Is that just Koresh on a whim, or is this something prophetic? Guess what the prophets had to say? It's prophetic. And that's the top left corner. So we're going to see the prophets are going to say it's prophetic, And the Jewish people's reaction to it is going to be pathetic. So take a look. Ezra chapter 1, the first year of Koresh and the age. Okay, when just as Yirmiyahu had said, God, Ha'ir Hashem Ruach Koresh, God, Koresh didn't say this in God's name. Koresh said it in the name of his king Marduk, I mean his god Marduk. But the Navi is saying, this is God behind the events, and he allowed the Jews to go back and return the house in Yerushalayim. And the coolest thing in Pasuk Daled is anyone who's not going back to build the temple and is Jewish to send money and support them. That's a topic we're not going to do tonight, but it's cute. What happens? I'll just review the history real quick. A small group of people, you know, a couple thousand, come back, take the call. They go back to Yerushalayim, all ready to build the temple. And it's the first intifada. Because they want to build a temple. The people, the local population is living there now, who the Babylonians brought in when we left. They sort of get into a fight with Zerubbabel, who want to build it. And they say, you're not building unless it's going to be an international city, all the kind of things. And they get into a fight, and they start throwing rocks, and they start lobbying, and they go to the UN, and all this kind of stuff. And if you look in Source B, chapter 4, Pasuk Daled, the Am Haaretz, the people of the land, not the Jews, were weakening the hands of Yehuda, and scaring them from building, and taking lobbyists, Sochrim Yotzim, to stop the plan, from the time of when? From the time of Koresh until Dayavish. This is about 20 years. There's a building freeze for about 20 years. The Jews have the right to build, but the local population is able to get an injunction and freeze. They start writing these letters about not to trust the Jews. It's all in the book of Ezra. And things are depressing again. It's like a really bad example. But the people who went through this, at first they're exiled. Got it? That's bad enough. So then they hope maybe they'll return under Koresh. They come back, and again, it doesn't work. Well, they're just, it's just, they get their hopes up, and it falls apart again. Hopes up, everything falls apart again. So I give a bad analogy, it won't like it. It's like dating. It's just constantly having your hopes up, and wham, it falls apart again. And they're down and depressed. You'll see why I brought the analogy in a minute. Now, it's the second year of Dariavesh, and now there's a new, the Republicans are back in. I mean, there's a new administration in Persia. And there's big hopes that the building freeze will be stopped. And now there's a chance to start building the temple again. And most of the people are saying, forget it, we don't even want to try, you follow? I just can't take the depression. I'm not ready for getting my hopes up just to get them smashed again. Got the idea? And then the job of the Navi is, or the Shadchan, is saying, give it a try. And that's Haggai. And that was the purpose of the analogy. But what's important here in the story is that they've been depressed and disappointed over and over again. Now there's hopes again. And most of the people think it's not time. And that's exactly what Haggai begins. And that's on the left column and C, on the bottom. In the second year of Dayavish, now that there's a new administration in Persia, this is the word to Zerubbabel is the political leader. And Yeshua is the religious leader. And now there's a chance to build again. You think about this on Hanukkah. Kate's Bavel. Kate Shivim. Remember? So that's the Zerubbabel. This is Zerubbabel, the song. The 7 years are 7 years of Yirmiyahu. And this is the return after 7 years to build the temple. Got it? You knew that, I hope? Maybe. You knew the song. You had no idea what I was talking about. No. Pasuk Bet. What are the people saying? This is not time to build the temple. Basically, we don't want to be depressed again. We tried last 20 years ago, it didn't work. We gave up hope before. We had one destroyed. You follow? Leave us alone. The people are saying, God doesn't want us back. This was a mistake. We shouldn't have made our way in the first place. Wrong. So the Navi says, that's what you think? Exactly the opposite. The reason why things are so bad, your economy is bad, your political situation is bad, it's because you're not building the temple. And Haggai's message is nice and simple. Start working on the temple, and God will bless your prosperity, and God will bless your land, and things will grow again, and you might even get your prosperity back. And your prosperity, and even your sovereignty back. The people are saying, we're not building the temple because God doesn't want us back. And it's time God doesn't want us back. Things are so bad. And the Navi is saying, the reason why things are so bad is because you're not trying hard enough to build the temple. You follow? They're arguing over what's the cause and what's the reason. So Haggai actually is one of the few Nevi'im that people actually listen to. And he gives them the speech in Rosh Chodesh Elul in the second of Dayavesh. He gives another speech Sukkot time. And sure enough, B'nai Kiva does a car wash. They start collecting some money. They got someone's uncle who got a free architecture. They got some non-Jewish workers to do the building, and they got everything ready for raised enough money for a groundbreaking ceremony. If you know, when you guys become members of Jewish communities later on, you want to build a shul, you don't break ground when you have enough money for the building. You break ground when you have enough money for the groundbreaking ceremony. Because Jewish donors and philanthropists don't like giving money to empty holes. That's sons-in-law do that. I mean, that's father-in-laws do that. To a bottomless pit. But you want to give money when you're sure the money is going to go to good use and not just get nowhere. Because don't give money to a project that's not going to get off the ground. So once I have a groundbreaking ceremony and I have plans and things are there, it's worth the investment. What I'm getting at is the goal of the groundbreaking ceremony is not to start building. It's to get people excited about it. And therefore, 2 months later after they started this whole movement, in Kislev, in the middle of the winter, they have a groundbreaking ceremony, which was really stupid. Why is it stupid to break ground in the middle of the winter? What? It's cold, it's rainy. It's not time to build. Wait till the spring, and it's going to take 4 years to build anyhow. What I want to suggest is the groundbreaking ceremony, which is going to take place on Hanukkah in Kislev, it's not by chance on that time of year. And that's what I want to do in the share in a minute. Just one last thing. In Source E from Haggai chapter 2, this is the Nevuah before 2 months before Hanukkah. He gives him what's called chizik. You've heard of the word chizik? Mm-hmm. Who needs chizik? People down and depressed. Therefore, he says, "Vatach Chazak, see Pasuk Dalet, in chapter 2. Chazak Zerubbabel, v'chazak Yoshua ben Yatzadok HaKohen HaGadol, v'chazak Kol Am Haaretz, Numashem, because I'm with you." And he promises, this temple can be greater than the first. Right now it's a joke, but it can be greater. Just don't give up. Don't give up hope. Finally, on the 24th of Kislev, so 2 months later, they have the groundbreaking ceremony. And in his speech, he says, he promises, pay attention now. It's the end of the winter. Next spring's still coming up. Pay attention. This year you're starting work on the temple. You'll see next year your produce will be much better because you care about Yerushalayim. And in the next Nevuah, in Pasachaf, which is also on the 24th of the month, on the same day, he says, there's going to be a political upheaval. See Pasachaf Bet, there'll be a political upheaval. The big nations are going to fall. Governments will take over other governments. Armies will take over other armies. And when it's all over, Zerubbabel, who's now just the governor, without any power, will become sovereign. He'll be able to sign, he'll have a chotam, meaning he'll be God's chotam, but he'll be able to sign documents. Means he's the one signing things, and he'll be Jewish sovereignty will return. And that's Haggai's big hope. Okay? Return to prosperity and sovereignty. A cute little side note is that we see from here that caring about rebuilding Yerushalayim leads to God's promise for better prosperity and better crops. And that might be one of the reasons why we save in the Yerushalayim invention. Because what's the connection between building Yerushalayim and food? So Azana Tako makes sense. Alar Sam Mazon makes sense. The first two blessings relate to food. What's Yerushalayim have to do with food? And prosperity, if you follow Haggai, it would give a good reason why, and we'll see, actually, the Chatimav, B'nei Brachman B'Shem Amin, is a pasuk from Zecharia, his colleague. So look in F, Zecharia in chapter 4, we'll talk about, he has a vision of a menorah. Basically, Zecharia, who's his colleague, during the same year, second year, Dayavish also has Nevuot, and his Nevuah is saying, the one we read on Hanukkah, he's saying, Haggai's vision is nice, but it's not only about Chayim and Koach, it's not only about return to sovereignty and prosperity, it's also about Ruach. And you have to remember, it's not enough just to build a temple and be wealthy again, and be sovereign. You have to be God's people, keep his mitzvot, and have Ruach, have spirit, and lead the people. So that's the background that's the historical background. Now we can get to work. What I want to suggest is, why is Haggai giving the speech on this day? Because they're breaking ground on the temple, but why are they picking this time of year to break ground? So I want to go back to depression. Depression. What time of year is the most depressing?
Winter now.
Why is that? Why is it depressing? Winter?
Dark and cold.
Yeah, it's dark. Dark, dark. There's dark nights and things like that. And a lot of people have a minhag, like when people are down and depressed, one thing that a lot of people do is they light candles. They saw the thing like in France. What are people doing? They light candles. And when Rabin was assassinated, what did everyone do? They light candles. Whenever there's a yurt site, we light candles. Ask an anthropologist. But that's what humans do. It's a sign of hope in times of darkness. Now, we're going to, our next source is going to be, it's on this page here. Pass up one more page. Pass this around. I'll tell you a story. We'll give out, don't look at the page yet. But I just showed you that the date of Hanukkah is important from 200 years before the story of Hanukkah. At the very beginning, the inception of the Second Temple period. And it doesn't seem to be by chance that we celebrate Hanukkah on the same day that we broke ground on the temple, 200 years before the event. And it might be, it wasn't just incidental that we finished fighting on that day. And actually, when you read historical sources about the battles of the Maccabees, we'll find out that the main battles against the Greeks were actually finished 2 months earlier. And the Temple Mount was already captured in Cheshvan. By late Cheshvan, early Kislev, it was already captured in Jewish hands. And what they did is they spent like a couple weeks, getting all the kelim ready. Not just the menorah, but all the kelim. And they purposely made the dedication ceremony on the 24th of Kislev. We'll see the source in a minute on the page I gave you. But I want to go back, not to Hanukkah, in the beginning by Cheney. There's the Hanukkah from the time of Adam HaRishon. Remember him? And it's pre-creation almost, isn't it? I mean, not pre-creation, it's almost from the day of creation. And we're going to read a story from Masechet Avodah Zarah about the first Hanukkah. You ever heard of this or not? So let me explain to you. Why would there be a tractate called Avodah Zarah? Isn't it forbidden to serve Avodah Zarah? So why do we have a tractate in the Mishnah called Avodah Zarah? You've heard of it, maybe? There's a tractate called Idol Worship. Why would we have one? So in Jewish law, called the Mishnah, the ancient Jewish law, there's a law in the Mishnah that says you can't make business deals with non-Jews on their holidays. Why not?
Because they'll thank their gods for
that. Exactly. They'll thank the gods. Oh, I got this deal. This must be, you know, thanks to Saint Kesef. And they'll thank their gods instead of, and it'll promote idol worship. So we don't want to help, you know, promote idol worship. So if you can do a business, they'll do it not on their holidays. So that brings up a halakha problem. I don't know the Goyish holidays. How am I supposed to know what the holidays? So the Mishnah has to tell us what are the Goyish holidays so we know when not to do business. So the next Mishnah talks about these are the holidays that you can't do business. And it talks about two holidays, one called Saturna, like the planet Saturn, and one called Kalanda. And we're going to see this holiday is what's called a winter solstice holiday. You know what that means, a winter solstice? There's four dates on the solar calendar. There's the equinoxes, the spring and fall, March 21st, September 21st, and then there's the solstices. One in June 21st, the other December 21st, on our calendar. Got it? The longest day and the shortest day of the year.
Solstices and equinoxes.
It's the regular, no eyes at the end?
Sorry.
Okay. It was once pronounced that way. Before Adam HaRishon. No. So the story goes like this. Look at the bottom right. Which is Talmud Bavli, Tractate Avodah Zarah A-B, on the bottom right of the page. Okay. Oh, I'll do the Hebrew, but we'll follow in English. So we'll translate. It's Elo Edem Shom Tei Kochavim. These are the holidays. Obrab Chana Barava, Kalanda, that's one holiday, is 8 days after the Tkufa. The Tkufa is the winter solstice. So 8 days after December 21st. And Saturn is 8 days beforehand. Now, how did this holiday come about? So the story goes like this. Tan Rabbanan. Lefishra Adam HaRishon Yom Shemit Bet Beholech. I'll explain in detail. Adam HaRishon got from his father-in-law a really nice watch after he got married to, what was her name? Chava. And he was a little boy. Wasn't much to do all day. But he starts noticing that the days... when was he made? He was created in Tishrei, right? It was a match made on earth, not in heaven, right? It was made from earth. But remember what happened? So he started noticing that like a month or two later, the dates keep getting shorter and shorter. And like after, he finished Shacharis, it's time for Mincha. The days keep, and it kept getting worse and worse. And he had a good Jewish math head. And he figured the progression. He did a calculation that within a couple months, at that rate, there'd be no more There'd be no more daylight. Got it? And then realize, oh my gosh, when he ate from the apple, remember that? And blamed it on his wife. And God got angry with him. He said, you're going to die. He didn't know what death meant. He was never a Leviathan. And therefore he thought, what's death? The lack of light. So watch what happens. Got it? So Torah Rabbanon. The Fisher Adam HaRishon, Yom Shem Mit Bait Bolech. Adam saw the day was getting shorter and shorter. Amar, he knew Yiddish. Oily. Amen? He said, Oily means woe is to me. Shema Bishvos Sarachti, maybe because I sinned. Olam Chashuch Badi, the world is getting dark because of me. V'chvazel L'Tov Avo. Because right after Tov Avo, God said, Bahi Or. So now that I've sinned, God's taking away light. And the lack of light is darkness. And that's what slowly is happening slowly. It's a, you know, progression. So what did he do? He doesn't give up hope. What's he do? B'zui mitashin k'sa lain min ha-shamayim. That's what God meant by death. Amar v'yashav chetemim betanitu v'tfilah. What did he do? He davened for 8 days. Hoping what? Maybe God would mevato the gzardin of his death and bring back light. And sure enough, he checked his watch after 8 days of fasting. What did he notice? The day started getting longer. So he decides to make a farbregen and he makes a holiday. Okay. Omar minog, it says, Kibashat kvat tevet, v'ra yom shem recholich, so the day is getting longer and longer. Omar, minogosh olamu, this must be the way of nature. And halach vasa shmonei min tovim, he made an 8 day holiday. Why 8 days? Why not? Okay. Loshana acheret, asan na'ilul il yom tovim. The next year, the 8 days he fasted and the 8 days he celebrated were both yom tovim. Who kabam l'shem shemayim? When Adam Rishon celebrated this winter solstice holiday, 8 days before, 8 days after, he did it to remember God. But his kids kept up the minhag and turned it into a pagan holiday. Understand? That's sort of what happened to. So that's the origins of a winter solstice holiday. Now you understand what's going on. Is it surprising that human beings or societies make a big deal about the winter solstice? Hey, it's dark. It's end of the year. It's something interesting. We have spring holidays. We have summer holidays. It makes sense that we have holidays on the agricultural year, on the solar year. Now, I'll give you an example of Saturn. Look on the left column where it says M, on the left column, but the left side, but the right column on the left side, M, like M. Yeah, okay. Which says how can have. So, see, A, someone read English for me. Who wants to read? Reader, English? That's my reader, English reader. Want to read? Yeah, read.
The Roman pagans first introduced the holiday of Saturnalia, a week-long period of lawlessness celebrated between December 17th through 25th.
It's like a whole week of pouring, let's see.
Yes. During this period, Roman courts were closed, and Roman law dictated that no one could be punished for damaging property or injuring people during the celebration.
Okay. Keep going. Ancient Greek.
The ancient Greek writer, poet, and historian Lucian, in his dialogue entitled Saturnalia, describes the festival's observance in his time. In addition to human sacrifice, he mentions these customs: widespread intoxication, going from house to house while singing.
Okay, we can stop here. but you see, it's a whole week of what we called pouring before. Even worse, okay? Now, so what happened? I'll explain what next happened. That was a. You see, Saturnalia, it's not just the Gemara. It's a well-known holiday. Which means it was a... In the darkest time of the year, people... It's almost like New Year's Eve parties, which is also winter solstice holiday, but on up by a week, but it's the same idea. And what do people do? Pretty much like that, but just maybe just one day. Some people are on college campuses Thursday night. Or Friday night. Now, what happened... That was the Romans. The Romans were Romans. They liked to party. So about 700 years later, around there was a guy named Constantine. Right? He saw the light, and he turned the Roman Empire from pagan to Christian. They got everyone from. And in his reform, he wanted everyone to accept Christianity. But you can't stop minhagim like Purim. You can't stop minhagim like Saturnalia. So now they have a problem. What's the problem? How do you turn Saturnalia into a... You can't mevato it, but it's pagan. So what did they do? They made up a medrash that he was born on that day. And so they kept on celebrating it, and they... So read on, now we'll see the part.
In the 4th century CE, Christianity imported at the Saturnalia festival, hoping to take the pagan masses in with it. Christian leaders succeeded in converting to Christianity large numbers of pagans by promising them that they could continue to celebrate the Saturnalia as Christians.
I understand. I said, people, they want to convert people. Hey, if I have to give up, I can't give up Saturnalia. It's like giving up, like giving up Purim. He says, no, you can keep your Purim, you follow, and still be Orthodox. Okay. The problem was...
Okay. The problem was that there was nothing intrinsically Christian about Saturnalia. To remedy this, these Christian leaders named Saturnalia this concluding day, December 25th, to be Jesus' birthday.
Okay. Because if you know Pshat in the New Testament, which you're not supposed to know, he was born in the spring. Okay. Okay. This is really cool, the next part.
Because of its known pagan origin, Christmas was banned by the Puritans, and its observance was illegal in Massachusetts between 1659 and 1680.
Glad for you guys, okay? Is that nice? So you guys are machmir. You guys are only people keeping the minhag. No, no. Now, okay, and one more cute little thing.
The Reverend Increase Mather of Boston observed.
I'm sure you all heard of him.
In 1687, that the early Christians who first observed the Nativity on December 25th. Did not do so thinking that Christ was born in that month, but because the heathen Saturnalia was at that time kept in
Rome. Got it? So he's basically they're Chokrim, they're academians, right? We're cut on to what happened, but you can't break minhag. When a society has a minhag, you can't break it. So what you do? You recreate, you rewrite your history to make it work. But you can't stop Saturnalia. But I'm getting at. It was a well-known holiday. Now, again, everyone's going to celebrate a winter solstice. The question is how you celebrate it. The same thing. Everyone has harvest holidays. The question is how you celebrate it. Everyone has symbols. Everyone has national symbols. Everyone has temples. The question, what do they symbolize and what do they mean to you? So what I want to suggest now is that the reason why they break ground on the second temple this time of year, it's not because they're ready to build, but there's something significant about this time of year, being at the darkest time of the year. What does it mean? If the winter solstice is the darkest time of the year, but what's nice about it, it's a transition because when it's over, the days start getting longer, almost like Rosh Chodesh is on a monthly basis. Rosh Chodesh every month is like the winter solstice every year because it's darker and darker, and all of a sudden, the days get longer and longer. The problem is, on a Jewish calendar, you really don't have a winter solstice, do you? Why not? Because the Jewish calendar is lunar, isn't it? So how are you going to find a winter solstice on a lunar calendar? You go by the moon, not by the sun. Not exactly. Because our calendar, even though it's lunar, it's also solar. What makes our calendar solar? The first month has to be after the spring equinox. And if it's the 12th month, it's ending. And we didn't reach March 21st, what did we do to our calendar? We add a month. And therefore, our first month is always the month of the spring equinox, no matter what. It might be the beginning, it might be the end, but it's that month. If that's the case, in what month will the winter solstice fall out? If the first month always has the spring equinox, how many months later is the winter solstice?
Six.
Nine, isn't it?
Nine.
Yeah, 9 months later. So what month is going to be the winter solstice? Either the 9th or 10th month. It's got to be either in the 9th or 10th month, the winter solstice. Okay? So that leaves a lot of room. That leaves a lot of latitude. Now, you might remember when Shabbos comes in the winter. Like, how much early is Shabbos every week, the last couple weeks? It's zooming, isn't it? Like, almost 10 minutes a week, this time of year. Comes December, you might remember. December, January, it's almost the same time. If you follow the curve, it's like, ask your math professor why it works that way. So there's a reason why. It sort of levels out. But all of December, January, Shabbos is around the same time, give or take a couple of minutes. And then it starts zooming again. It's a curve like that that goes whoop and then and up. Now, so the nights are long. The longest nights is all December, all the 9th and 10th month, all Kislev and Tevet. But even though the nights are long, some nights have light, even though they're long nights. What nights of the month have light? When there's a moon out. Now, is the moon out all night long every night? The same moon?
No.
You ever notice the moon gets bigger and smaller? I'm sure you noticed. If you ever... No, you're not dating yet, are you? Like this at all. So you know, but you notice the moon, don't you? It gets bigger and smaller. No. The does anyone know when in the month the moon? When is the month full? When is there a full moon? What day of the month is that?
15th.
By definition, it's a full moon. And when is there no moon? On zero, the first day of the month. There's no, or just a little crescent. But after the first day of the month, you see the crescent like running sunset. The next day, it's a little bigger, and it's up for an hour and a half before sunset. And the next day, it's up for two and a half hours before sunset, and it's a little bigger. By the seventh of the month, it's half full, and it rises. It's up from sunset to midnight. And then, you follow, and then on a full moon, it's already out the whole night. But after the full moon, it rises later every night and gets smaller. And by the last week of the month, when does the moon rise? The last week of the month, the moon rises at midnight, and it's getting smaller. And the last couple of days of the month, it rises like 2 or 3 in the morning, and it's even smaller. Understand how it works? I'm assuming you know that. You should have known that. You look puzzled. But check it. I'm not making it up. You can just take a look. What time of the month? Now it's a new moon. Tomorrow night, the moon will be out. You'll see it around, at sunset, it'll be about, like, that high. It'll be like 45 degrees, and it'll be up for about 3 hours. And the next day, I'll be up for 4 hours. You follow? It's 45 minutes more every day. And bigger every day, and then it gets smaller and smaller. What I'm getting at is, what nights of the month have no moon until 2 or 3 in the morning?
The end of the month.
The end of the month. And less and less. And if I'm looking for the 8 darkest days of any month, when would that be?
The end of the month.
And the first day, or 2 of the next month. Got it? Or basically the 24th or 25th till the 2nd. Which is exactly Hanukkah. So, if the darkest week of any month is the last week of the month, okay, and the winter solstice is in the 9th or 10th month, what is the darkest week of the year? The last week of Kislev. Make sense now? I hope it made sense. Doesn't it? Because if I'm looking for the winter solstice, and I'm looking for the darkest nights of the year on a Jewish solar lunar calendar, the best time to put it would be the last week of the 9th month going into the 10th month. Which by total coincidence happens to be exactly the nights of Hanukkah. And by total coincidence, is Machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, are we counting down or counting up? You know that Machloket? That's exactly Beit Hillel, that's exactly the two holidays, isn't it? Getting darker and darker and later, are you pessimist or an optimist? And you know Hillel and Shammai work out. It's consistent that way. So it could be, because that week is the darkest week of the month, and the darkest month of the year, darkest week of the year. But what's nice about it, when it's over, the days start getting longer, and there's more like the moon starts giving light, and then the days start getting longer. That might be a great time of year, thematically, to break ground on the Second Temple, giving what message? There's hopes in times of darkness. I'll give you there's a story in Tanakh about a lady who was like really down and depressed. She had kids already, but her husband died. Probably killed by Zedo. Her husband was a rabbi, one of the dream. And she had 2 kids, but she couldn't pay off her debts. You ever read about that story? She kept crying to Elisha, and what did Elisha tell her to do? She says, pay your debts. Yeah, I can't, because I have no money. She says, do you have anything at home? What'd she answer? She's got a little jug of oil, a little thing of oil she had. It's a dark ballad in Malachim Bet. What did Elisha tell her to do? Daftar from what?
Like 2 3 weeks ago.
Daftar from?
2 3 weeks ago.
From Vayera. Yeah. Vayera with the birth, because she gets it. Maybe, I mean, the next story is the Shoshamit, but this leads up to it. It's about, because you know why? What, you know why we started there? Because that loan shark who took her kids instead of annulling her debt, that's Minak Sdom. He had the right to do that, didn't he? Shali, shali, shacha, shacha. No, you owe money, you pay. That helps us because of Sdom. Understand? You know what was still about Sdom? Sdom was like those, it was raw capitalism. No, only mishpat without staka. Now, what happened? What happened? I'm losing you. No. What happened? That lady, what'd she do? Elisha told her, get oil and do what with oil? Borrow kelim from your neighbors. That's fixing stone, isn't it? Borrow kelim from your neighbors. And take the little thing of oil and pour it, like the thing of the pot of porridge that never, you learned that story. And keep on pouring up. Sell the oil and pay off your debts. That's it. And it worked. Remember? That's a famous miracle. And what does it happen again? Isn't that Nes in the menorah? What was Nes Pach HaShemen? Take a look in. It wasn't like you were told, maybe. They didn't light the menorah that lasted for 8 days. Look carefully. Look at the Gemara and where's the Gemara? On the same page, on Sorshi 2, on the right side. See Mitzvah Chanukah Neri Shubito from Sechet Shabbat. So there's Mahadrin. The original Mitzvah Chanukah was everyone lit a Yahrzeit candle in their home. It wasn't a menorah or Chanukah. Yeah. The original was just lighting a candle for those 8 days. And then Mahadrin, every person lit a candle. And then we started the 8 days going up or counting down. Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Now, the next paragraph on Chanukah. What's the reason for Chanukah? Tanur Rabbanan, the 25th of Kislev, 8 days of Chanukah. You can't do Hesperim and you can't fast. Why? When the Greeks came and desecrated the temple, they desecrated all the oil. After the big war was over, what did they find? There was only one cask, one little thing of oil that was kosher. Listen carefully now. Shemunach b'chot Moshe Kohen Gadol. That the right hashkach, it said badatz. Okay. What's bo mean? In the vessel, in the thing. Ela lalik yom echad. There was enough oil to light the menorah for one day. Read carefully. Naseh bo nes. What's that mean? The miracle was in? In the pach. Naseh bo nes. The menorah would be ba. There's a bo. It's in the pach. Like pachim tanim. It's zahar. Vidliko mimeno, what they do? They lit from what? Means every day when they lit the menorah, where they lit the menorah from? From the little thing of oil. Make sense now? But what the miracle was in the medicine cup, in the medicine bottle, in the. You remember when you were a kid, the medicine bottle doesn't finish. Yep. Sometimes you have a bottle, you don't see what's inside, but it keeps on pouring. There's always something inside. Now. It's clear now. You understand the Nes Pach HaShemen? The Nes was in the Pach, not in the menorah, because they lit the menorah every day from the Pach for 8 days. The Shana Acheret Kavum Vasum Yavim Tovim Halabodaya. So the next year they made a holiday. Now, if we only had this miracle, would that be and no military victory? Would that be a reason to celebrate for all generations? For sure not. We don't have a holiday the day of Elisha did his miracle. If we had the military victory, would we have a holiday? Maybe the dead generation, like Yom Yerushalayim kind of thing. But it wouldn't be, it would filter out after 10, 20, 30 years. It didn't mean that much to people afterwards. But what makes Hanukkah a celebration forever? So there's something eternal about Hanukkah. We have to figure out why the rabbis give it. What makes the holiday even after the Second Temple was destroyed? During the Second Temple, after the victory, it becomes a big national holiday. It's said by like the Al Nisim. Later on, the rabbis turn it into a holiday more about the menorah. We'll explain why in a minute. What I want to suggest is as follows. If these last 8 days of the ninth month are the darkest time of the year, and they reflect hope in times of darkness, it would make sense for Haggai to have a dedication ceremony specifically then, because what problem is he dealing with? He's dealing with a depressed nation who's given up hope. And when he makes that dedication ceremony, he wants to pick a day that has meaning. And therefore, it's not by chance they dedicated the temple on the 25th and the 24th of Kislev. It's on purpose they did it then, because that time of year represents hope in times of darkness. Because right afterwards, things are getting lighter. In Sefer Malkim, we're going to read, actually you can read it over here, I'll first let me tell you what happened. When the Greeks took over the temple, it wasn't just Greeks, it was Hellenists. It was more of a civil war than a war against the Greeks. The Greeks were helping the Hellenists. But the Hellenists were using the Greek army as their ally to fight these religious Jews who they were sick of, keeping all these ancient minhagim. And when they desecrated the temple, 3 years before the miracle of Hanukkah, when the Greeks came in and desecrated the temple, it was with the Hellenists. You know what the Hellenists did? On the 25th of Kislev, they purposely defiled the temple on that day. And they brought a korban on that day. You understand what I mean? If the Hellenists purposely, the Jewish Hellenists, purposely desecrated the Beit HaMikdash on Hanukkah 3 years before the miracle of Hanukkah, why did they pick that day? That day what I'm getting at is the day of Hanukkah was important from the very inception of Bayit Sheni. And every year they would remember Haggai's Nevot, which never really came true. Because Haggai promised to return to sovereignty and prosperity and greatness. It never happened. Until when? Until the Maccabees. You know why they were called the Maccabees? Because they beat the Greeks. So they didn't celebrate till that. It seems it was always a day of memory, but it was sort of a sad day. Now, after the military victory, they say, "Hey, we fulfilled the vote of Haggai," and it becomes a big celebration. The question is going to be, why continue to celebrate Hanukkah after the Korban? There's no reason to celebrate it anymore. The Korban, once the temple is destroyed, why have a national holiday if the temple is destroyed? So guess what's going to happen to Hanukkah? Before the story of Hanukkah, it was a holiday of hope. Hope that one day things go better. After the miracle of Hanukkah and the military victory, it became a national holiday celebrating the victory in our sovereignty over the Greeks and return to sovereignty, the Hasmonean dynasty, lasted about 100 years. After the temple was destroyed, there's no reason to celebrate Hanukkah anymore as a national holiday of military victory. What's it become again? It returns to becoming a holiday of hope. And therefore, what do the rabbis do to Hanukkah? How do they turn it into a holiday of hope as opposed to a holiday of nationalism? Where do they put the focus on? On the Pach HaShemen. Because what's the Pach HaShemen a symbol of? Hope. That's the story of Elisha. And that's the story of light in times of darkness. That's the time of God giving a sign through oil. So it could be that. Now, I'll show you the same thing in Josephus. See, Josephus tells the story of Hanukkah. It doesn't mention Nes Pach HaShemen. Nor does Sefer Maccabim mention Nes Pach HaShemen. What do they mention? The big military victory. For a good reason. If you were reading the New York Times that time of year, what would be the front page article during the war, during that time of the revolt? Would it be the military victory or the miracle in the menorah? That was front pages. Now, how many people knew about the miracle of the menorah? Yeah, and how many people in the temple would know about it? The one or two Kohanim who felt the oil? It would be, and you would only notice after a while. And would people believe them? Do you tell other people? You got it? That's not... On the Sunday Times religion section, there'd be a little article about rumors about a miracle in the temple. That's not a reason to make a national holiday. But rather, the rabbi saw that as a sign from God that there's something special about this military victory. It's not the Sibah, it's called a Siman. And a very fitting one, because if the miracle was in the menorah, that goes back to Zechariah's nevuah with Haggai, that v'lo b'chayav v'lo b'koach kim bruchi. Zechariah's whole message was, it's not just about nationalism and return to prosperity and sovereignty, but about being a nation serving God. And if you know your Jewish history, the rabbis didn't really like the Maccabees too much, after a while, because they became a little too haughty and a little not firm enough. They became stukim. And it was a national holiday that they couldn't get rid of because it was a national holiday, Hanukkah, and they wanted to give it religious meaning. And therefore, they moved the focus, hundreds of years later, they moved the focus of the holiday from the military victory to the next Pach HaShemen, which is right on the mark, something they should have done. So Josephus writes that he brings the whole story. Look at the very end of it. He tells the story. We worship the dedication of the temple for 8 days. He says, from that time to this, we celebrate the festival called Lights. He's not sure why. I'm not supposed to respond. It's because this liberty beyond our hopes appeared to us and was given a name. He's not sure where the minute came from, but because he didn't hear about it in Sefer Maccabim, which was written about 100 years beforehand. But he says, it seems like it's a holiday of hope because our hopes were, didn't have it and it came back to us, and lighting candles was a sign of our hopes that were fulfilled. On the English side of we'll finish up here, but on the Sefer Maccabim, on the left column, it has a story about when they came in and cleaned up, when they won the battle and cleaned up everything. Read from 47, okay? What did you want to read? Read from number, Pasuk 47, in the book in K.
Then they took whole stones according to the law and built a new altar according to the former, and made up the sanctuary and the things that were within the temple and hallowed the courts. They made also new holy vessels, and into the temple they brought the candlestick, and the altar of burnt offerings, and of incense, and the table. And upon the altar they burned incense, and the lamps that they were upon the candlestick they lighted, and that they might give light in the temple.
So what did they do? They made everything new, And this takes several weeks, maybe even over a month. It took. Now, 52.
Now, on the 520th day of the ninth month, which is called the month Kislev, in the 148th year, they rose up in the morning and offered sacrifice according to the law upon the new altar of the offerings, which they had made. At the same time and day, the heathen had profaned it.
On the same day that it was profaned 3 years earlier, they made that. The dedication of Hanukkah, Chanukat HaMizbeach, was specifically on the day. The same day it was dedicated, 200 years earlier, and the same day they broke ground on it 200 years earlier, and the same day it was profaned 3 years earlier. It means that day was special from the beginning of Beit Sheni, and that time of year was special from the time of the Adam Rishon, because it's the winter solstice. Now, in Judaism, it's a winter solstice holiday, because it's marking not just our military victory, but our hope of return to sovereignty. But when we mark our hope of return to sovereignty, we need to remember what to do with our sovereignty. And the message of Zechariah, which is the Haftarah for Hanukkah, of Lo b'chayav v'lo b'koach kim bruchi. You need sovereignty, and you need prosperity to be a nation serving God. But if that's all you haven't accomplished a thing. To be on the map, to be a nation other people look at and respect, you have to have a country, you have to have sovereignty, you have to have prosperity, you have to be... Now, but with that prosperity, you have to channel it in the right way and sanctify God by how you use your prosperity, how you live your life, how you build your society. And that's going to become the eternal message of Hanukkah, and that's going to make it a holiday, that's just for Beit Sheni, like all the other Beit Sheni holidays, just to make it a holiday for all generations. And the rabbis putting the emphasis on Nispach HaShemen are right on the mark. Because Nispach HaShemen exactly represents the message of Zechariah, who's Haggai's colleague, and the message of hope in times of darkness. And for over almost 2,000 years after the Churban of Beit Sheni, Jews kept on lighting Hanukkah candles and remembering one day we'll return to this thing, and your generation, or our generation, there's more. We've returned to sovereignty, we've returned to prosperity, nationhood. But the message of Zechariah nowadays, and the message of Nispach HaShemen is even more important. Because now that you have prosperity and sovereignty, what do you do with it? Do we just celebrate a national holiday? Is it going to be about nationalism and we're stronger than everybody? Or we thank God for the blessings of having sovereignty and prosperity, and what do we do with it? Do we sanctify God by channeling it in the right way and using it to better mankind and be a model for other people to learn from? So if I want to sort of summarize, is that what we did? Now you understand the title? What was the title? The prophet is who? Haggai, because he stole Hanukkah way before Hanukkah. And the holiday wasn't by chance. It's a winter solstice holiday. And its very origin, going back to the Gemara Avodah Zarah from Adam Rishon, it really has a very, logically, it has an origin very similar to what Christmas was. That's why we compare it to the other title. That doesn't mean we're celebrating the same thing. It's how you celebrate and what your themes are. That time of year is important in Jewish history, because what keeps us going through Jewish history is you can have goals. And that's like, remember Yaakov's dream we have in this week's Parsha? Yaakov has a dream. And he has it all. One day I'm going to come build a temple. He can't do it now because his life is falling apart. He's a fugitive running away. But the fact he can't fulfill his goal to work for God and dedicate his life to God, he can still do something symbolic to remember one day he'll come back to that goal. A lot of times in history you can have a goal that you can fulfill, but you need to remember one day when you're able to be able to fulfill that goal. So Hanukkah, for hundreds of years, was a holiday of hope. For a while it was a holiday of nationalism. It went back to a holiday of hope. And nowadays it's back to a holiday both of hope and nationalism, and the hope that we understand what to do with our nationalism and make something good about it. And what's really cool is the symbol of the State of Israel. Remember that menorah outside the Knesset? That's modeled after Zechariah's Nevuah that came with Haggai. Remember the menorah with the two Zeitim on top of it? And I think it's a very fitting symbol of the State of Israel. I don't know if it matches the State of Israel, but it should match the State of Israel. So hopefully, in our celebration of Hanukkah today, it makes it even a little bit more meaningful. So there's a value to celebrating military victory and seeing the hand of God in miracles. There's a value in appreciating the purpose of a miracle of oil, what it represents from the time of Elisha. And the idea that in times of darkness, in Judaism, no matter how bad things are, there's always hope for a better future. And we can help that future come along. And then when God blesses us with fulfillment of that hope, what we do with it will always be key. And that's what makes Hanukkah something, especially nowadays, even more meaningful than it was for... It's always meaningful, but our generation, we have a lot to learn from it. I'll take questions if you want real fast. I think you're... Yeah.
Um, You may need. Is there a connection between the 8 days and the 8 days of Chanukah Mishkan?
Yeah, there's Yom HaShemini, the 8 days of Chanukah, was the 8 days.
So the
yeah, the celebration of a Mishkan was 8 days.
Right.
And then the miracle, 8 days, it comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. Eight, Shmoni Me'milah.
Right,
but
like, Sefer Makkavim says they did an 8 day, like Chanukah Mizbeach.
Was like that, and they did an 8 day, in Maccabees 2, it was 8 days to making up the Sukkos. Mm-hmm. And Shmini Atzeret was 8 day. So if it was 7, it would make sense, 8 would make sense. 1 day's too short. When the holidays sink in, you gotta. Like Pesach, it's got to be a long time. You have to get sick of it to appreciate it. Okay. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, and have a good Kislev, and and don't get depressed in the winter, especially here where the days are like really getting shorter and shorter. And keep up the good work. Okay. Sure.
You're doing something over there during the winter break?
There's a flyer
floating around here. Oh, in Israel?
No, it's in New York, it says. The flyer doesn't have a date of a year on it. It could have given you last year.
There's a program in Israel.
Something
maybe last year I did something.
It could be. The flyer's in the name of the image.